Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
You ask the GP. Dr. Nina Burns, who's a GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic, is with me in studio to answer all of your health questions. How's things, Nina?
Good.
We are right in the peak of a hay fever season, aren't we?
We are. And while we're all loving the hot weather, yeah, you know, I think the dry heat brings its problems for hay fever. So first of all, obviously, if it's dry and it's dusty, you have a lot more kind of allergens in the air and that can drive it. But also, you know, everyone, it's too hot to kind of sleep without your windows open. Really, a lot of people have the windows open. In Ireland, we love drying our clothes on the line in the fine weather. So it's always just a reminder that, unfortunately, like, pollen counts are often highest early in the morning. So when you sleep with windows open, you're getting a nice kind of dose of pollen first thing. And if you dry your clothes on the line, particularly the sheets and towels, and then dry yourself or sleep in them, you're just wrapping yourself in a bed of pollen. So I really feel for people. I suffer with hay fever myself. So it is important as well just to think that there are lots of different treatments, not just antihistamines.
Just on that, quite a few people getting in touch talking about the over-the-counter antihistamines not working, doing nothing for their hay fever. What else would you recommend?
So do go, I mean, chat to your pharmacist. They can suggest other things, but also go to your doctor, because there are some prescription medicines. Mm. Sometimes we increase the dose of antihistamines for some people. We prescribe nasal sprays, prescription anti-allergy eye drops, and there are some other anti-allergy medicines that we can prescribe. So the important thing is to say, like, don't suffer in silence. The symptoms are miserable, and you know, hopefully we can help most people. But it's not something you feel is too silly to go to the doctor. Yeah. People come in and go, oh, it's just hay fever, I know. But I'm like, you know, hay fever is very debilitating when it's bad. Yeah.
087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number if you have a question for Dr. Nina Burns. This listener over the last couple of weeks, Nina, says they've felt what can only be described as kind of twinges across their breast area. It started on the side of my right breast, now moved to across both, sometimes under the arms as well. I'm 37, 1 year postpartum, but never breastfed. It isn't painful and not constant. It feels like it's muscular. Do you have any thoughts?
So I suppose, you know, breast, chest pain, there are so many different causes, and there's a whole load of questions I want to ask this person, as any doctor would want to. So I think, you know, if you've had pain going on that you can't explain, it's always worth going to your doctor, having a chat, and they can explore asking different questions, just explore what might be the cause of the pain. Yes, a lot of the times it's muscular, but I would never put chest pain down to being muscular if it's lingering without going to see someone and chat about it.
So they really need to go to the doctor.
Yeah, it's just too, I can't really give advice on that because there's so many different things that could be. They definitely need to be assessed and examined. Yeah.
This listener has a 2-year-old who keeps getting little spots under his eyes. They're small, they're red. He's not scratching at them. They don't seem to be bothering him, but they do come and go. And I'm wondering what's causing it.
So, you know, we talk about young babies having this thing called milia, which is where they kind of get this little rash. They can sometimes call it baby acne. That's often in very young children. But tiny red dots are often what we call folliculitis, just inflammation of hair follicles. If you're using, depending on the creams and things you might be using on their face, or kids sometimes just rub under their eyes when they're tired or whatever, and it can irritate the skin. So it might be just something like that. You could certainly show them to the pharmacist, or, you know, the next time you're in with the GP or book an appointment, go in and have a look. Sometimes they need cream. For the most part, if there's spots that just come, stay a little while, go, and like there's a good gap between, and it's not always the same spot coming back. It's usually nothing too much to worry about. But again, any rash sticking around, always go get it looked at.
087 1400 106. Again, back to antihistamines. Can you take them when you're pregnant? I'm currently 12 weeks.
So the older antihistamines, the ones that we call the sedating ones, so Pyritin would be one people would be familiar with, and they are usually considered safe in pregnancy. The newer ones, it's not so much that they're not safe. We don't have big trials showing them. So they're usually only given under doctor's advice. But Pyritin is one you can talk to the pharmacist that is allowed over the counter in pregnancy.
And can you take them long term?
So you can. I mean, anything in pregnancy, like we say, you know, take them as needed. So Pyritin is not something you have to take every single day. But certainly in hay fever season, if you're miserable and, you know, she's beyond the 12 weeks of pregnancy, then you could take them fairly regularly for a while. But again, if it's something that's going on longer, go see your doctor. So, for instance, the steroid nasal sprays that we use, the older one, Beclizone, it comes as a nasal spray, and that can be used in pregnancy. So, there are other options apart from taking antihistamine tablets. And the only reason I say that is the older antihistamines can be quite sedating. You can feel quite tired on them.
Listeners, a 17-year-old son who had glandular fever last October went undiagnosed until at the very tail end, still has some lightheadedness and restless legs. Is there anything I can do? Is this normal? He's had a CT scan and an MRI and everything was clear.
So glandular fever obviously is one of these post-viral syndromes. You know, glandular fever being a virus, but people commonly can get kind of fatigue after glandular fever. And often eating well, gradual return to exercise and stuff can help. But obviously, don't put everything down to the glandular fever. If he's not well, has he had bloods done in the last few months? You know, things like low iron and all that kind of stuff can cause restless legs as well. So it's important just to check that out.
This texter, Nina, says they're having a lot of stomach trouble, problems, bad indigestion, cramps, diarrhea. They've also had piles, had the camera. Everything seemed to had the camera done. That was all clear. I'm wondering what it might be. Is there anything I can take that might ease the discomfort?
Well, so it sounds like this person's been investigated. I mean, yeah, with those symptoms going on, we would obviously rule out things like celiac disease. And then, you know, we would do colonoscopy and gastroscopy if it's ongoing. And usually if all that's normal, the other thing I would do is an ultrasound, make sure they don't have gallstones, which sometimes can lead to stomach issues. But if that has all been done and everything's clear, then it's most likely what we call irritable bowel syndrome. And the treatment for that varies hugely from person to person. There are lots of different dietary approaches. There are some medications we can prescribe can help. Peppermint tea can be very soothing for the wind. So go talk to your doctor, go see a dietitian, review your diet. Sometimes you can identify a couple of triggers. If it's irritable bowel, one I always say is garlic and onions are two of the biggest triggers for people for irritable bowel. So, you know, keep a food diary. If you have bad symptoms, look at everything you ate and find a common denominator. Artificial sweeteners is another one. So chewing gum and stuff like that, you swallow a lot of air. Artificial sweeteners can cause bowel irritation. So if this person drinks a lot of diet drinks, sugar-free gum, that kind of stuff, they can create a lot of wind in the gut as well. So maybe have a look at that.
Yes. But yeah, and dietitian meeting or appointment.
Yeah, and I think if you're going to go see someone like a dietitian, it's really helpful. And even going to your doctor, like write down everything you've eaten for the few weeks before. And especially if it's a day you've had a bad flare, write down everything you ate in the previous 24 hours. I know that feels like a lot of work, but sometimes you do that a few times and one thing just jumps out and then you know what your trigger is.
You know what it is. Yeah. This listener was recently bitten by a mosquito. Their leg is inflamed. They've been using anti-itching creams to try and ease the itch, but it's still actually, it's very swollen. Am I going to need an antibiotic to try and reduce that?
So some people react more to insect bites than others. So apart from the anti-itching cream, taking an antihistamine can help. But sure, yes, if it's staying very red, and particularly if the redness is spreading, it might have become infected from the scratching more from the bite. So we sometimes start with like an antibiotic cream, but some people do need antibiotics by mouth. So if this has been around for a while, it's not getting better, you should go to the doctor and have it looked at.
Yeah. I'm after developing what I think is called a floater in my right eye in the past 2 weeks, seeing black spots, and now I've blurred vision, like a shadow in the eye. It's for a 58-year-old man. I was told by the optician that it will settle down, but it's really interfering now with my vision, and my eyes actually seem really dry too as well.
Okay, so floaters are kind of like little black spots that move in the eye. It sounds like this person has gone to the optician and had an eye exam. And floaters themselves, once the eye has been checked and pressures and all that kind of stuff are okay. But floaters shouldn't cause blurring of vision, and they certainly shouldn't cause a shadow. So I suppose if you have a sudden onset of a shadow in an area of vision, that can actually be a clot behind the eye, and that's one sign of stroke. So if you suddenly lose some of your vision, you should treat that as like those fast signs in stroke and go to a doctor. From what I can tell from this person is this is going on a while, but I wonder, was the shadow there when you saw the optician? Because usually people are getting shadows or blurring of vision. The opticians will do a good eye check, but they would normally then recommend going on to see an ophthalmologist, which would be an eye doctor, to see does any treatment need to happen to the back of the eye. So really, what I would say to this person, if this just happened today, you should see a doctor today. If this is something going on a while,
In the past two weeks.
But I just wonder, is the blurred vision itself new? Because if you've blurring of vision, the opticians wouldn't normally say it'll ease off. So if there's a blurring of vision is different to floaters. Okay. Floaters in themselves can kind of feel like there's something in front of your eye and it moves, but they shouldn't cause a permanent shadow or blurring specifically.
Okay.
It's just teasing those two things out. So definitely go have a chat with your doctor about that. Yeah.
I think I have a nail infection. Listener wondering, can they still get a manicure?
So obviously you should not go and get a manicure if you have an active infection. In the same way, if you have a foot infection, you shouldn't go get a pedicure. All salons should be using sterile equipment. Obviously they should be, when you're getting a pedicure, you should ask for this. They can put like a plastic coating on the bowl to know that the bowl hasn't been used by anyone else. And obviously we would like to think that everywhere sterilizes in between. But, if you have an infection and that's not happening to the next client, you could pass it on. And also if the instruments being used are not being fully sterilized in between. So I suppose the obvious answer is no. If you have an infection, don't go get a manicure.
A minute, Nina, because I can imagine now for a lot of our listeners, they're probably thinking when you say that. So the bowl should really be fully sterilized.
Well, they should be cleaning plastic. It between uses.
Course,
so
yeah.
It's funny, I was in the States recently and I was in California and I got my nails done and I was talking to someone and they all line the bowl with what looks like a clear shower cap before in between every use. And by law, they have to do that in California. And I noticed here after COVID, some places were doing it. My daughter was saying there's one salon she goes to where you can pay extra to have it. But, you know,
to make sure it's sterilised.
Well, places should be cleaned in between, especially when you're, you know, the instruments they use to go under your nails and around and trim the cuticles and all that, those should be sterilised in between use. Now, they can do it like they used to do hairdressing things. But it is important, especially when it comes to foot care.
Absolutely,
because, you know,
yeah.
So I would
sure
always look at the hygiene of where you're going. Yeah.
People listening to you saying that, thinking, Did my place do that the last time I went?
Yeah, so just particularly for feet. I mean, for hands, like nail files and stuff, I suppose it's different. Nails are dead cells. Do you know what I mean? But certainly if you're doing foot care and taking dead skin off and things like that, like then you want to make sure that everything is clean.
Dr. Nina Burns, GP, Generation Health Medical Clinic. You can get more from Nina on X at Dr. Nina Burns and their website is generationhealth.ie. Nina, thanks a million for joining us here on the programme. Email, if you want to share your own story, is lunchtime live at newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.